Right, here we go. We're back with another Weekly Sheep Fan podcast. This is episode 221. 221 I had to put up with. No wonder I'm bald. The format is simple. We try and release four shows a month. Members get full podcast, and it's available to download at sheepfan.co.uk. Non-members can also get part one, and they can also download it at sheepfan.co.uk and at Podomatic as well. All new shows are released on Saturdays. I keep saying this because, believe me, I get emails. And it's like I haven't actually said this. It's like, probably because I'm saying it every week, it's like it just goes into oblivion. Anyway, Podomatic, send them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible, and Apple. And, yeah, please subscribe, notifications, join my large nostril brother on Instagram. He's getting a bit of a crew built up on Instagram. Right, Chris?
A little bit, yeah. I'm not an Instagram addict, but I do go on it every day just to check.
Right.
I get messages, yeah, backwards and forwards. I put pictures on of new releases and stuff as well.
Right.
Just saying what we're going to release or what's coming up.
Right. Yeah. And that's about it, really. Joining us tonight is Lance and Andy. If you're watching this on video, you'll see that from Rise Above. We're going to catch up on the live event that we were down in Bournemouth at a couple of weeks ago with Mark Devlin, and talk about a few other stuff. I think them guys are going to release this out on Patreon as well, if you're on Patreon with them, or Peasantron, as they call it.
Yeah.
I made the error, right? I'm not a Facebook man. I mentioned this in part two. We've already recorded an hour and a half, part two. But I don't go on Facebook. But for some reason, Lance popped up on my Facebook. I've got it by default because I had to set an Instagram account up for Health Bunker. And to do that, I had to have a Facebook account.
I wondered
account.
About that. I thought you weren't a Facebook person. When I saw it, I was like, oh, there he is.
Yeah. So I made the mistake of accepting whatever you do to connect with Lance. And about a million other people then now. yeah. And I dare unconnect, or whatever you call it.
Now he just doom scrolls all day.
No, I don't. I don't go on it at all. But there you go. So that was my first fleeting glance into face crook.
I tell you what, so I'm getting to a point now where I really wish I didn't have to have it and use it. It's for me the platform that sort of helps to tie everything else together, because I can advertise the YouTube or the Patreon on there. It links with the Instagram, like you just said, Don, the reason you have it. But I tell you what, it is one of the worst. It's probably second worst to Twitter for getting caught down a bottomless rabbit hole of nothing, and also getting radicalized as well with some of the events in the last 2 weeks, and just looking on posts, looking at people's comments, and I felt myself getting radicalized by it.
I told you a few weeks ago, Rise Above, now my Instagram feed has gone full anti-Semitic.
Right.
It's your fault, though.
It's gone full anti-Semitic just from looking at one or two things, and the algorithm is just pumping me full of... But then on the other hand, I'm getting loads of, like, Palestinian hate videos and stuff like that. Like, it's just religious bait on my Instagram whenever I go on it now.
You've opened a door, Andy.
Yeah, I have, yeah. Yeah. I think David Irving opened it for me.
I remember listening... I've got quite a few of his books in my little library. And
you got Hitler's War, Dom?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I've got the Hitler's War.
I've got I got the second to last copy of that in the UK available. Right. Brand new.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
I've actually never read any of his books.
Hitler's he's a very War good writer.
The Hitler's War is his staple.
His life to resistance. Yeah.
That was his, was that his first book?
No, that was his Churchill's War.
Yeah.
Churchill, wasn't it?
But he went to Germany and got allowed into... I don't know why they allowed him in to see all these, well, they weren't ancient, but old World War II, Nuremberg type thing.
It's because he wrote the book Churchill's War from the German perspective.
An honest opinion.
Churchill wasn't
the hero
like he was from other English authors. So that's why he was the only one who gained access to the interviews with the likes of Hitler's actual staff that was still alive. His some of Hitler's wife's relatives,
right,
or girlfriend, whatever, you know, some very people very close to him. He went and saw Himmler's brother.
Lovely lad.
Yeah. Like I said, he knows.
Great sense of humour.
He was the one who got the closest, and that's why everyone else...
God, we barely even said hello to each other this evening, and we just went straight into that. Yeah. Straight into,
yeah. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, well, yeah, why not? Yeah. But I mean David Irving was proper straight-laced historian before he found out that Churchill, the story of Churchill, was just absolute bullshit. And, yeah, well, I mean, Churchill was a Mason, wasn't he?
So
it was
his father was as well. Man.
Yeah, raging alcoholic, couldn't string a sentence together. All the speeches. One thing that got me was we were brought up in a house where Churchill, might as well be the same person, but Churchill was the hero of the World War II.
Yeah.
Question him, and you were just. The Antichrist.
If like most households are fine. Most households. Yeah.
So when I found out that he didn't do his own, even say his own speeches, then that were a real wet fish moment for me. One of those, not a fucking another one, you know, but a big one. That were quite a big one for me.
I think Irving said the same thing himself, didn't he? That he didn't expect to dig all that shit up on him.
Well, so Churchill didn't write his own speeches. You actually said he didn't say his own speeches.
He didn't say his own speeches.
What?
He did it after the war.
He's an actor.
Yeah, he did it after the war. The guy was called... Can you remember, Andy?
I can't remember his name.
I'll dig it out. I've been writing about it because I'm writing a book.
This.
Yeah, I'm writing a book about the nonsense in 2021. All the cheap fan presentations. And I'm on Boris Johnson's part. And he wrote a book called about Churchill because he was obviously the reincarnation of Churchill. And yeah, the guy that did the voice did Larry the Lamb as well.
Is it Booth or Boone or something?
Let me look it up while you guys are chin-wagging on. Yeah. I'll find it.
Even the beach on the beaches, that one was an actor, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember when I was really young, but before I even really knew who Churchill was, and my dad telling me about a very famous happening, whether this is true or not, my dad made it up, I don't know. But apparently there was a time in Parliament where a member of the opposition was digging into Churchill and he's like, "You, sir, are drunk."
Yes, I've heard that story.
And Churchill came back with, "I may be drunk, sir, but you are ugly." Like that. Yeah. Like, as in, I could be sober tomorrow, but you're always going to fucking look like that. And I was really too young to appreciate why my dad was telling me this. He was saying, it was this legendary Churchill moment where he just
I've never heard of this.
Hey, it might be true. You've heard it. Okay, yeah. So it's at least an old wives' tale.
Oh, excuse me. I've heard of that phrase. "You, sir, I've heard that, but I didn't know it was in relevance to Churchill or anything, but I have heard that." Maybe in some movie,
like known that he liked to have a drink and would be, like, maybe even potentially drunk
when he was meeting, top officials from other countries, he was just pissed, man. It got to the point where it was an embarrassment for everyone else around him. Like, you know, because you would have, like... his deputy prime minister and the his just aide, even his fucking receptionist. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, he would whatever.
They'd have to be like constantly picking up the slack for the head of state.
The point where he was an embarrassment.
So, but was the EU guy who was always carried to and from the podium? Is it John? Juncker?
Oh, the old guy.
The old.
Fella.
Is it John-Claude Juncker? Van Juncker, whatever his name is. He was like. Absolutely fucked
drag him
up
there and
the time.
Prop him up.
He had his shoes on. He had the wrong shoes on. Like absolutely plastered. I think he's been retired now.
Who was the Russian one who were always pissed? He wouldn't even get off the airplane.
Yeltsin.
Ooh, Yeltsin, right? Stuck on the plane saying he were ill and he was drunk.
Yeltsin.
But yeah, Churchill was more or less dragged back into the Conservative Party because his son Randolph had run massive debts up. And they were calling the debts in.
Right.
Trouble. If you actually read, I haven't read Churchill's War by David Irving, but I've read segments of it, and he was in real trouble, Churchill. That's why he prolonged the war.
Yes, so it was a guy called Norman Shelley that Norman Shelley.
The voice, the speeches.
And Churchill recorded them after the war, post-war. And they said they did it because they lost the recordings, so he did them again. This was after the war.
Back then, it's like There wasn't, you couldn't check things on the internet. You couldn't go and see the original recording. If you didn't see it when it was the first broadcast of it back then,
that was it.
That was before
there was no VHS player.
Yeah, people
Michael.
Didn't have the ability to record anything back then.
No.
Apparently, his trick, I remember now what I wrote, Norman Shelley's trick was to get everybody to close their eyes and then do a Churchill impression, and he couldn't tell it wasn't Churchill.
Well, for all intents and purposes, he was Churchill.
Yeah,
because that's where people remember him from. Because, like I'm saying, I'm very surprised because I didn't know this. But if you think about Churchill, you think about those most famous epic speeches and the cadence of his voice, fighting them on the beach and all that kind of stuff.
It's not him, Michael.
That's
so you've probably never heard him speak.
Reality 101.
Never heard him speak.
Apparently, he was in bed for 9 o'clock. He was in bed because he was that pissed. He was in bed at 9 o'clock.
He used to drink early. He used to drink early in the morning, drinking wine in the morning and stuff.
Yeah, on his cornflakes.
I don't think he even had cornflakes.
No, probably didn't, mate. Probably drunk them.
Speaking of that, Chris, I can see you've got a nice bottle of something in the background there.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Got a bottle of... I've got a question because I've got a factoid. Does anyone know...
I'm going to open it in a minute.
How old wine is and where it was first invented?
Oh, I take it as Georgia from where it's first invented from your Facebook.
I found
Facebook
that because I'm not even a big wine person, right? And this is the second time I've been to Tbilisi in Georgia. The wine there is unbelievable. Like the red wine, it's like semi-sweet. It's like the best thing you've ever tasted. And I was looking into it. The earliest traced wine in the whole peasant sphere, 6,000 BC, in Georgia at the foot of the Caucasus Mountains.
Right.
And I was
Caucasus
like,
Mountains, you say?
Yeah. So where does Caucasians that mean, come from?
Wine's Jewish.
in the old town, they had this graffiti on the wall. It said, "Beer was made by man, but wine was made by God."
Well, and there you go.
And I thought 6,000 BC. That's older than ancient Sumeria, isn't it? That's before the Romans, Greeks. That's 8,000 years ago. Yeah.
It was more used as a preservative, wasn't it, back then? I'm sure
they used to ferment.
Drunk.
They used to ferment because water was dangerous.
They did wine. If you think they did wine, the Europeans did beer and the Asians did tea, so they could carry it around basically. That's why a lot of Asian people, if they drink beer, they come out in rashes because they haven't got the genetical, you know.
Yeah, they've got a genetic predisposition to basically
alcohol.
React to fermented. All alcohol is fermented. Yeah. But your wines and beers.
Yeah, because they were just drank tea. They were boiling water.
Yeah, but they worked out thousands of years before the peasants in this part of the world.
Just boil it.
Just boil the water. Oh, no. We'll make beer out of it and we'll just drink beer all the time. Peasants back in the day must have been wasted.
Maybe somebody had a shit they did, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe somebody had a crystal ball and saw Chris's face on it.
In the Bible, it says drink from the new, not from the old, which means grape juice. So he's drinking grape juice, I suppose, or a form of it, rather than the...
Unless it's Julian Huxley and he wrote about transhumanism, new bottles for new wine. Mm. New bottles for new wine.
Yeah. Did you see that, what is it, that they made a film about David Irving? Did you see that? I watched
So there's a couple, right? There's there's one called Deception...
I saw the Timothy Spall one.
There's a new one that's been made.
Right.
There is a new one.
They have to do another one, Andy.
And they did one that was back in the day about the trial.
Yes. That was Channel 4 or something ridiculous, weren't it?
That was pure propaganda, that one there. But I'm not sure about the new one. They're actually reinventing it. It's called Denial.
Timothy
Spall.
And that's not a river in Egypt.
No, it's not.
I saw the one with Timothy Spall out of Our Reader's End. He played David Irving.
That's it, Chris. Denial.
Is that the new one?
Yeah.
It's not that old, yeah. They virtually made him out. They kind of suggested he were inappropriate with his own daughter as well.
2016, it was made just as it started to become trendy being anti-Semitic again.
That sounds about right. Well, that was kind of like
it's,
when...
I don't know if you can see
I probably started maybe 2018 or something. But that were when revisionalists were becoming more.
See that term you just used there, revisionist. I believe that's straight out somewhere like the Tavistock Institute. That's
straight out of the handbook.
That is instantly a red flag when anyone hears revisionist history.
Wait a minute, isn't someone that questions history? Aren't they just a historian?
Well, isn't that what history is?
They're a revisionist.
No, but that's like if you question certain parts of
Michael, that you. it will get to a point now, especially here in the UK, with our ever-growing socialist agenda, that you won't be able to question any narrative sooner or later. Because they'll come up with terms for everything.
The Soviet Union was a testbed for that, wasn't it? That's the first time in my lifetime where, apart from, you know, like racist slurs, there were words you actually weren't allowed to say, like legally. You know, it was the first time there was a proper stick to beat you for saying certain things, whether it's being deplatformed, whether it's being fired from your job.
Well, now you get done for not saying words, I suppose. Where I don't know. I saw that story about that Irish guy having his bank frozen for a teacher. Was it? He got sacked. For not not talking in the pronoun kind of world.
Did he say something crazy like there are two genders or something like that?
Something like that.
What a wacko!
Froze his bank account for.
Right, I think the show. In Ireland. Bloody hell.
Froze bank account.
Look at all he left out about 100 sexes.
Speaking of bank accounts, I've been seeing a lot of videos lately.
I was about to say this.
About people going into banks trying to withdraw
reasonable amounts
of money. Yeah. Like, I think one was £2,500 I saw just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, and the guy got completely quizzed to the fact they literally weren't going to give him the money. And he said it's from a son's motorbike. And they said, well, we can see the receipt. He's like, well, I haven't bought it yet.
No, they were asking for proof.
Yeah, they were asking for proof.
And he said very reasonably, like, well, I haven't decided which one I'm going to get yet. I've got a budget of £2,500, want to withdraw the money and then go shopping with my...
Why am I even...
let him do it.
Why is he even having that conversation? Yeah. Give him a fucking...
An automatron, why am I having that conversation with you?
I mean, it's not like I would understand if someone who had a very large amount of money in their bank account wanted to walk in just off the street and be like, right, I want 150 grand in 20s. You might need some time to get that together for the...
Yeah,
like so, you know, that might have to
two
be
and a half grand.
But £2,500.
I did it last year. I went and bought a newer car.
They said you can still use your card.
You can buy that.
£2,500. That's fine, but you can't have cash.
I had to get 15k out last year to go and because if I buy something, I buy it in cash, especially things like cars. And I got asked all the questions, and I literally said, that is none of your business. And just eyeballed them. They're like, okay. I said, you know, I could tell you this, because they would let me out. I had to get it in 2 different days, £7,500 a day.
Yeah.
And I had to wait a day for that to even kick in.
And it's the same if you're putting it in as well.
Well, if you're putting it in, the law is anything above 10,000 and over triggers an automatic call to the police.
Yes.
For money laundering.
I don't think it's to the police. I think it's to the HMRC or something like that.
The men in black suits.
Should have told them you're buying crack lamps.
Mate, I worked. We were talking before.
When you just say that, I said it to the second one. I said, for all you know, I'm going straight to blow this on cocaine and hookers. And then he looked at me. And I said, yeah, see, it's a stupid question. It's none of your business what I'm trying to do with my money. It's crazy. Yeah.
But, did one of them say, can I come with you?
Yes. Yes. Let's go.
But how messed up is that if you think about that on a grand scheme, that they're literally not allowing you to use cash but only big purchases via...
The thing is, you could have if you'd said to them, oh right, okay, I'm going to close my account, you could have transferred the money into another account with the press of one button and just emptied the account.
Yeah.
You still can't get the cash though from that new bank.
No, you have to buy something online and go for a monthly subscription.
It's just that slow creep, isn't it? They probably don't even have any money
again,
in the bank.
This is like you were talking about. This is the first time that they've ever like censored. There are certain words you cut. This is all since 2020.
Yeah, of course.
Oh yeah, all since 2020. Happening. Yeah, and like since flip that switch.
We were talking about politics earlier and the politicians and Churchill and stuff. I've been paying very close attention to Nigel Farage and the Reform Party, particularly a MP called Lee Anderson, who seems to be a particularly charismatic when he's speaking, and he can talk quite well, and
like JD Vance.
The whole thing just reeks of Trumpism. It's what's happening here in the UK. Is what was Biden?
Well, did you hear that Richard Tice said?
One cloud cycle.
Exactly what we were discussing.
Did you hear what Richard Tice said? We've never Crabclaw told me about this. He said, Richard Tice, he sent me the message, like the Facebook screen shot. He actually said, why don't we stop paying the interest back to the Bank of England? But bear in mind, Richard Tice is like one of the founders of the Reform Party. So he said that in a speech. Why don't we stop paying $17 billion a year back to the Bank of England? That's our deficit straight away. Where's that? Nobody's ever said anything like that.
That's pretty unfounded for someone that is still essentially like an establishment mouthpiece, really.
Yes.
To be saying something like that. So that's sort of in line with some things that Trump has sort of alluded to, like, you know, about the Federal Reserve. You know, he's basically getting rid of all of these institutions, Department of Justice, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what's
Department of Education.
He's defunding the FBI. He's doing. Well, what is the number one establishment stronghold that we have in this country? It's the Bank of England.
Yeah.
You know, so
they're dismantling everything brick by brick, aren't they?
We are literally seeing the collapse of government in real time.
Yes.
And they are doing things like, look, if you actually take a step back and look what Keir Starmer is doing, it is so fucked up. Like, there's no way anyone in any kind of sane capacity can sit there and say he's doing stuff for what the majority of the British native population want.
I dread to think what they've got on that weirdo.
I think Dom, he likes it, mate. I think he likes it. Like we saw
what Matt dry
Hancock. No, but I think he likes what he's doing. I think he likes. Look at that Chris Whitty back in in 2020. What was going on? He didn't look like he didn't look like he was enjoying it.
No,
he didn't want to do it. Right, but Matt Hancock was loving it, and Keir Starmer looks like he's loving it. I've watched him in Parliament talking. Like, he loves it, mate. He loves it.
Love the power.
Yeah. But he actually revels in the fact that he's destroying people's lives, man. Mm. He's really enjoying himself.
Sick motherfuckers out there.
I've never really paid attention most of my life to how they behave in Parliament, what they talk about and stuff. But it's just a complete clown show at the moment.
Yeah.
Like I've seen odd bits, you know, back in the past, but this is what they're doing now is just.
But we're all in,
and they're very clever about it because all it is a big scapegoat. That one party, 4 years, another party gets in, they just blame everything on the other one, and then if someone else gets in, they can just blame it on the last one and be like, it's just a big blame game. It's such bullshit.
And even more so, and the turnover of the leaders is even quicker than the 4 years, isn't it? They just turn them over.
Yeah, they last 2 years now, don't they?
And then they're gone. And then he's forgotten about. So whatever they did is just.
And they ride off into
the
sunset.
I think that's like a post COVID or at least.
Yeah, it's a new thing.
A post 2012.
Do you know, since Cross-Eyed Brown, since Blair gave his step down, there's been. So the Brown wasn't voted in. Cameron wasn't voted in because the first one was a hung parliament. May wasn't voted in. Initially, Boris wasn't voted in. Liz Truss weren't voted in, Sunakers weren't voted in, and the incumbent, the last one, Keir Starling, is the last one that's voted in. So there's been five prime ministers in the lot since 2008.
Am I getting this right, or didn't Boris get voted in the second time there was a vote?
No, when he initially took over the Tory party, there were like a 6-month thing where he wasn't voted in. The guest we had on last week. He might be a good one for you guys to chat to, actually. Guy Anderson, he was an ex-Mason, and he was saying that it must have been around early 2019. They got called to a meeting at their lodge, which were full of coppers, and the head copper was head of security at number 10 or something like that. I might have got that part wrong, but...
Is this guy an order follower?
This guy was on our podcast.
Yeah.
Was he
a copper?
No, he ain't. He ain't a copper. But the guy who called the meeting was, anyway, when they eventually turned up about an hour late, they all said, well, where you been? They said, oh, I've been in an important meeting in the city. I couldn't get away. We've been choosing who the next prime minister is, and it's going to be Boris Johnson. Now, whether it's true, the guy's been told this by the guy that set the meeting up in the lodge. And somebody said, well, how did Boris take it? He said, he didn't like it, but he ain't got a choice.
Well, he was told, wasn't he, when he was very young. That came out way before 2020 and all of that.
Yeah.
Everyone knew Boris Johnson was. Yeah. He was told when he was younger he was going to be.
Well, I've got a chapter in the book called "Programmed to Be King," and it goes into all the parts where he was. He used to take baths with his nanny, a 6 foot chain smoking nanny.
Mate, I dread to think what happened to him when he was younger.
Yeah.
I think we saw as well for the first time was Sunak was clearly making himself look ridiculous. So Starmer,
mate, it's a carefully scripted peasant show where I personally, this is my opinion, I think people like Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak, fucking Keir Starmer, they have just been given free rein to fuck up the country with very few things. Okay, you can't do this, this, and this, but you can do fucking whatever else you like.
Have you ever played you Dominic Cummings' father-in-law's video when he's talking about genealogy? I might play it. Actually, I'm going to play it. It's only about a minute and a half long. He's talking to a load of Geordies. I'm surprised they don't kick his fucking head in, to be honest with you. It's Baron Humphrey Wakefield. He lives at... Can you remember when Dominic Cummings, during lockdown, him and his wife and kids, and they all went up to Durham and he got apparently told off? That's right. Well, it's there. This is the guy who had the castle.
This is the king of the castle.
King of the castle. Listen to him talking about genealogy and how they choose people.
But policy is interesting. But in general, to be elitist, I think the quality climbs up the tree of life. And therefore, in general, high things in the tree of life have quality, have skills, and they get wonderful degrees at university. And if they marrying each other, that gets them better again.
So you wouldn't have minded if one of your children had met someone from a lower socio-economic group who was intelligent and talented and...
Intelligence and talent is lovely, but I want parents and grandparents who've had hands-on success running their battles well and proving they're wonderful, because one is the subject of one's genes, and I like the idea of them being successful genes and winning through to successful puppies.
Some things haven't been in genes, though, have they? Like, there's been some outstanding people and geniuses who've been, like, first generation.
No, they aren't. Very few first generation geniuses.
And very few, but there's still few.
Like which? Of course there are.
It's only very few.
Normally, because you think of Bertrand Russell, for instance. Okay, ancient family, Dukes of Bedford, Wittgenstein, ancient family.
I think basically what he's saying there is you've got to come from a family of satanic paedophiles.
Transgenerational cubism in your family.
The overall arching factor is that they are eugenics.
Yes.
Eugenicists.
Someone somewhere is mapping out who these psychos are.
If people who went to the Britney Spears concert knew about how these eugenic psychopaths operated and how important things like DNA are to them.
Yeah,
and
they wouldn't have been doing them tests, would they?
And like these, what are the DNA things? You send your DNA.
23andMe.
All of that kind of shit.
Do you hear that's just gone bankrupt?
Careful, let's not destabilise tomorrow night's show. Things like that is just completely ridiculous. If you know how these people were at the core... They are eugenicists, and we're living in a technologically advanced time at the moment. And like the two go hand in hand. You've got transhumanist weirdos who are also eugenicists who love technology, and they're trying to get everyone to inject technology.
What could go wrong?
I mean, like, what the fuck is wrong with everyone?
And there's definitely at least one sect that just want to kill, poison, and murder everyone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Through technology.
But going back to the tweet, you
think about it. If you send your DNA to some dark occult eugenics transhumanist, they can literally just go on their computer, type your name into their little search engine for your DNA, and say, okay, this guy's got some slightly weak kidney maybe, yeah, okay, we'll target the kidneys.
Yeah.
And like, it'll just be a nice, easy way to
and then
get them to go to their GP, prescribe them something that's just going to destroy their kidneys, and they'll be gone in 6 months.
And someone goes, are you sure you got the right guy? Yeah, he sent us fucking 12 PCR tests.
Yeah, but going back to, I always think,
and this is me being fucking super paranoid. You know the thing of buying gold and silver and having it delivered, and then you think somewhere there's a database who, if everything goes ratchet, knows that you've got fucking gold and silver at your house for when the robot doctor turns up. That's detecting your gold or silver.
No, they just point a big magnet at you.
Gold magnet.
Yeah.
But going back to 23andMe, you know who set that up, don't you?
I've heard. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I know there's a very nefarious.
Well, it was the guy that set Google up. Sergey Brin. What's the other guy called? I don't think it was Sergey Brin's wife, but it was going to be the 23andMe was going to be the Google of genetics.
Yeah, I've heard multiple bad things about all of these DNA,
but it doesn't matter that it's gone under
companies
because they already sold all the DNA.
I was going to say they've already got the information.
Yeah, yeah, we presented that a while ago, didn't we? That they already got rid of a load of the DNA.
Didn't they send it to BlackRock? From Vanguard,
GSK, GSK, 3.3. GSK. They did a deal with GSK about 8 years ago,
and that's GSK is a big pharma
vaccine company.
Vaccine company, yeah,
yeah. Nothing to see here.
That makes perfect sense because if you remember the presentation that we did at the Weekender, we were talking about what is Project Stargate, you know, Star of David Gate with Sam Alt Control Alt Delete Man.
That's right.
And what was the other guy called? Larry Steen, something. So the first thing that they dropped in their big flagship speech was personalized AI. Cancer vaccines, can I say that?
Taylor Schwab to your own Taylor DNA.
Taylor Swifted to your,
in 48 hours,
So if they wanted to
Mike's a bit loud, Chris, if you turn it down a bit.
They wanted to be the Google of meat suits or whatever the thing, that would make perfect sense because if you've got like the database of everyone's electronic information they've been giving up to you for years through social media, and then you've also got a copy of their DNA as well, and you know you've got access to like the NHS app that's got someone's complete like you just know everything about that meat suit.
You sit it down with your main part of your computer, Chris. Not that thing.
Yeah, sharp, Chris.
I actively refuse.
Why am I? I'm only suggesting what you need to do. That's what you need to turn it down. Why
since
am I
2021,
you are.
I went to the dentist. Well, I didn't go to the dentist in 2020 for obvious reasons. But in 2021, I went. And all of a sudden, it's the same dentist I've been going to since I was a little boy. And they asked me, every time I go there to fill in a medical form, ask me loads of different questions. I refuse every time. Every time, for the last 4 years, they've been trying to get me to fill this in every 3 months.
So some hungry, starving parasite.
Refuse to do it, yeah.
Mm.
The only thing they said I have to fill in is if I've got any allergies. And I actually said to them, I'm only allergic to government.
Yeah,
that's what I said.
You rebel.
I'm allergic to jabs.
She wrote it down. I don't know if it's on the system, but she actually wrote that down.
Anyway, we've done nearly an hour already. Well, half an hour, 33 minutes to be exact. and we haven't even spoke about the event yet. We've got carried away with a short intro for us.
Oh, that was the intro chat, was it?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, the loosener.
You said we didn't actually have any subject matter to...
No, we've no subject matter, mate.
It's nice just to be organic, isn't it?
We're just kicking it.
We're shooting from the hip, yeah.
So the event, yeah, mate, I'm not going to lie. I think we're all over the moon with how it went.
I bet you are.
Everyone seemed really happy.
People were gushing about how happy they were.
Everyone, we announced that we're going to do another one on Bank Holiday weekend, and we had people saying that they're going to cancel family.
Cancelling my family holiday. It was amazing because, like we were saying before we started recording, you know, we put on two sort of like mini festivals before, which
both
is
very different.
Both very different. A summer one in a field and a spring equinox in the woods. This was different for us because it was obviously in a hotel and we were we've had talks before, literally just someone on the microphone, but we've never really tried to do the show in a live setting before. So that was very exciting.
With live guests.
Yeah, yeah, live guests.
Live presentation.
In front of a packed out room with 250 people there. And that all went fantastic and everything, and then it was great to be sat there with you guys. But for me, what really made the event is like the conversations and the meetings I had with people. I made my absolute utmost effort to make sure I tried to speak to everyone that attended. And I was up quite late most nights on the smoking patio with people as well.
Mate, people were still getting fucked at 7:30 in the morning.
Well, on the first night on the Friday meet and greet, people went till 7:30 a.m. I got a phone call at 1:30.
Where are you?
You're supposed to be home at 10. And I sort of jumped in the taxi. When I got back the next day for the setup at 10 a.m., I heard that it was still going on like we said, 7:30. Yeah. But after the actual main show, people were just sort of mingling for like 24 hours. We had a 24-hour bar as well, which obviously helped.
The bar didn't know what hit them.
Yeah. Lance. It was finished, the bar.
He says he wasn't quite prepared, but the thing was, at the last two events we've done, there wasn't a lot of drinking. There are some people that prop up the bar the whole time, but
this is what you said to Sam, the manager there, didn't you? You said, look, there's some people that will, what did you say?
I said, we have some people that will literally prop up the bar 24 hours a day. They'll have a drink in their hand as soon as they get there, and they'll be finishing their last drink as they walk out of the door. We've also got a lot of people who are fairly moderate drinkers and some people that don't touch a drop of alcohol. So how do you plan for that?
Yeah,
that's what I said to him, because the bars didn't smash it at the other events. We didn't have to like restock them or anything.
No,
A lot of people were partaking in other herbal remedies like the grow out of the ground, and you could roll into a spliff and stuff like that. It was amazing.
At Equinox, quite literally, everyone had mushroom. Everyone I spoke to had mushroom.
A lot of people, deep into their middle age, that have never done mushrooms before, got caught in some Ramish trade. Everyone was basically just trading in mushrooms and stuff at the first event.
Bartering.
Yeah, bartering. Yeah, look, tried them for their first time at Ra Treat in Equinox, which was quite special. Yeah.
When you do these things, though, you don't realise what you're actually organising. A lot of people coming up to me at your event and the ones that me and Chris have done in Huddersfield, saying how much it means to be able to go and meet people. I know you've called yours in the flesh, but actually meet people and they didn't have to break any barriers down.
Mm. I think that's one of the nicest things. That was a seminar, like I said, as done. People saying it's just nice to be around the fuck. I don't have to shield what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Can just be myself and just talk.
Funny you should say that, because at our next event is going to be a full sort of 3-day.
Yeah, because it's on the bank holiday weekend, we're going to make sure there's stuff to do Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
And we have been specifically asked to do speed dating.
Right.
So when we did the last event, Lance ordered, what did you order? 250 red bands.
I got 250 red bands and 50 green bands.
For the wristbands, yeah.
And right.
We said to people, because I did the check-in on the Friday night for everyone. I said, would you like a red or a green band? And they asked, what's a green band? The green band is if you're available and, want to chat or,
single to mingle,
don't
basically
mind being approached.
Green go, red stop.
So, and they went the first, they went in the
first.
We
ran out of green bands on the first night, pretty much, yeah.
And then there was a lot of people there who were looking to meet someone.
Right.
Romantically.
It sounds funny, but I mean, why not? Because, I mean, someone's asked, me if we can do like a dating thing. I mean, I said, if you can do it, but I don't know.
Well, we're going to do it. We're going to do a Rise Above speed dating event at our summer event in August.
I mean, you're part Black Chris, but you don't like Zilla.
Single and ready to mingle and know what the COVID union is up to.
Because some of the feedback we had was like, not only had people if they were single, had not been able to meet anyone since 2020, because they just couldn't go through the rigmarole of going, have you been to Britney Spears? Some people are like, I haven't been out because I don't want to socialise.
Makes sense,
With non-human entities.
NPCs.
So I literally just stay at home. And, sometimes we forget that we're very lucky to be in relationships with people that are on the same page.
I met my Ramish queen at a Rise Above event yeah. we got together at.
The bottom line yeah. is right. that...
Same thing. Did you have a green band on, Andy?
I didn't have any band on. No, I wasn't even up for meeting anyone or anything. It just happened.
Right. But the bottom
it was
line
the best
is,
thing. So let's see if we can facilitate that for others.
We now sort of right. feel like a certain responsibility, not just to have like a cool show on a Friday night. And Peasantron, our responsibility is also to try and provide a calendar of social events for people now, because that was the most amazing feedback. It was like, you know, I had someone on Sunday come up to me, and I won't name who it was, and we had like a teary moment together. That they were like, you do realise that Rise Above essentially saved my life.
I don't know how to say things like, when people say this stuff like that to me, I don't know how to, I know Chris has had it as well, I'm sure you guys have had it, but I don't know what to say. There's nothing I can say because we don't do it. It doesn't even enter your head that that's there's
more,
that outcome.
It's stranger to have it in person because we've seen a lot of emails.
We've had messages and emails.
Stuff,
like, thank you so much for being there for us. So to know it's not just me that thinks about this way in certain world.
Yes, it's an amazing thing that is.
Have it in the flesh.
Because I think what I'm trying to say is we completely underestimate how isolated some people are that look like us. You know,
remember we had someone call in right on one of our customer services shows? I think it was one of the first we ever did. And they said they're in a village completely on their own, like small village. And it was just them. Like they couldn't talk to anyone at all. And they said that the only saviour I had was Friday night right above.
That's nuts.
I mean, it was all locked down. They said they were in little village. There's like one shop, one pub, and everyone knows each other's shit. And they're all...
Yeah. They've got to keep their mouth shut because even if you're in a little village,
they couldn't even talk to anyone about it.
Yeah, that's awful, man. That's awful. I mean, I don't talk to anyone other than doing this and Dom.
I have to talk to Chris.
We have to talk to each other. I go to work and work in a kitchen, and I mean, they all know my opinion, all the guys in the kitchen, but you still have to restrain yourself a little bit, don't you? Well, mainly because no one's interested, but you know. You can't just talk like we're talking now. You've got to kind of keep it on a low key to an extent. So it is hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's something that's started like what we did and you guys organically in 2020 because we were pissed off with what was going on, has turned into something that you just didn't expect because that's not what you started the process for. And I know a lot of people think you're doing it because you want to be known. I certainly don't want to be known.
I do. I want to be known.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah. I want to be left alone, man. That's why I moved to the forest.
Yeah, man.
I took myself away from people because I think they're retarded.
And Andy deals with it a little bit different to me, I think.
Well, I think me and Andy are a bit similar. We're a bit more direct out with than you guys. You're a bit more diplomatic.
I'm not going to lie. When we were sat there, all of us at the desk in the show, and I was like, fuck, this is different to a Friday night. I feel like sat here on a Friday night with all our controls, and we know exactly what we're doing. We feel in complete control.
Mate, there was fucking 250 people behind the screen.
And I know Fran's him, and he goes, do you know what? I just got to remember I've got my screens and I've got the Queefmaster here. This is like my protection zone. Because the front row of all the seats was only maybe, say, a metre in front of us.
Yeah,
and funny enough, the people that were sat in the front row were, that we sort of knew some of them. We had Future Ghost. There was a few faces right up the front, but it was totally different.
It was fucking weird, man. Don't forget, right? I'm a DJ. Yeah, I hide behind the decks. I can, like, if I want to, I interact with the crowd. But like Lance is an MC. Lance loves talking. He ring announces.
I noticed
that. He stands up protest talks. I'm not into that. So that was the first time I've ever addressed like more than probably 100 people.
I have to say, though,
it was fucking weird. And the next time we do it, Lance is like, we're going to be elevated next time. So everyone
people complained at the back they couldn't see.
No, I agree.
There was like 20 rows of seats.
I personally think, from a logistical point, because we've got screens in front of us, I think the crowd needs to be elevated so they can see over the screens. That's what I...
Like a Colosseum.
Have a terrace.
Elevated, they're going to just see more screen.
Okay, well, maybe when we're getting booked to do live podcasts at the Albert Hall...
Well, there we
like
go.
That, we can pull that one off.
Shout out to Fabio and Groove Rider. They've just done a thing at with the BBC Orchestra.
Yeah.
I saw that on social media.
I don't call them the BBC now.
Drum and bass with a live orchestra.
I call them the
now, they were in tuxes. I saw on their social media a pair of them in tuxes with caps on.
Sellouts.
I don't call them BBC anymore. I call them the Bill BC. Obviously, because they're funded by bitch tits, weren't they? Bill BC.
Bill BC, I like that.
Oh, I just stick with the Bolshevik broadcasting corruption.
All of it. Fucking, yeah, anyway. They were parasites. I saw someone, I know they went strong on Andrew Tate and he basically filled them in. I'm not a lover or hater of Andrew Tate. I don't understand what's going on there, but I know they're following him a lot. And I notice how they... I mean, you've mentioned Andrew Tate, I think, Lance, because you're in the fight game. I know he was in the mixed martial arts.
I met him in 2020.
Right.
You announced him, didn't you?
Yeah, because in 2020, basically, a lot of people, even in the fight game, were scared of travelling around when all the domestic shows were shut. Right. But the larger shows that were behind a paywall, like pay-per-view, that didn't need the ticket sales from physical meat suits watching the fight, they were still going on. But a lot of people, you know, their missus like, oh, I don't want you to get stuck in this airport. I was like, call me, I'll go anywhere. And I managed to get to Romania with Brave Combat Federation, and I got the fight card, and it was a lot for me. I'd never emceed sports with no crowd before.
Right.
It was
it's weird, right? Because
I'm
a big fan of ONE FC, and it's so weird. If you look at their old videos, everyone's in masks, like all the teams in masks.
And the referee has
no one
a mask
shouting. There's no one shouting and clapping and cheering, and it must be so fucked up for the.
So I'm there in this cage with no crowd, and it was being broadcast to all over the Middle East. It was actually owned by the King of Bahrain's brother, Sheikh bin Hamad Al Khalifa. I think that was his name.
How the hell did you remember that?
I had to memorise it, mate. And I had to say it properly. I had to like announce to His Royal Highness because he had a live feed.
All right, yeah.
And basically, I didn't really look at the fight card. And halfway through the fight card, I'm like, and introducing next in the blue corner, Andrew Cobra Tate. And then Andrew Tate walks out. And I was like, this is weird because it was an MMA show. And they'd booked, it was obviously a bit like a show fight.
Because he's a kickboxer.
Yeah, it was a kickboxing fight. And the guy, he fought, he absolutely battered him.
What, battered Andrew Tate?
No, Andrew Tate battered him.
Yeah, mate, he's a good fighter. This is the thing, because people were saying...
People say it's fake, oh, he's just an actor. No, he's not a real legitimate fighter, and he can fight. I know people in Luton that trained him that are big mates of him. And he's a fully legitimate fighter.
Regardless of if he's a retard or not the guy can fight.
I just wanted to clear that up because here's the thing: people will throw the baby out with the bathwater. They'll go full retard and say, "No, he's literally just a hologram. He's not a real boy. He's made of wood. Whatever." No, Andrew Tate, right up to the point of him being a millionaire. Combat sports professional.
Because he didn't make his money through combat sports.
No, you don't make that much. He probably got paid 30 or 40K for this fight.
Yeah.
But at that point, he was making millions out of the what's it called? The fucking cam girls.
He had the babe station and all that kind of thing,
and the word on the street was that he had the hottest models. He would fly them all over the world to do these locations.
The reason he had the hottest models is because he paid them a little bit more than everyone else.
No, I'm not saying so everyone wanted to work for him. He's not a bit of a misogynist and he's not a bit of a sexist. He blatantly is, but whatever's happened with him to be elevated to this point,
because he made a lot more money with like Bitcoin and shit like that, and like, you know, crypto and trading and all that kind of shit.
But he's being heavily demonized right now.
Yes.
And do you know what it's off the back of?
Go on.
There's a TV show, and I am gonna talk about this tomorrow night on the live. It's called Adolescence on Netflix, and I actually had the pleasure of I say pleasure.
Ah, yeah, he was named on it. Yeah, somebody just told me that actually.
Jeremy Vine.
It's everywhere. Now that I've told you, you'll see it everywhere. I actually saw the whole thing start to finish before the what's happening now, where it's everywhere you look, and they're talking about it's been taught by Queer Starling.
Yeah, it's being weaponized.
I saw it in the news. Yeah, it's in the news feed.
It's supposed to be based on true events, but they say it's not one event. And it's about a young lad who goes mental and stabs a girl to death. But the uproar is, well, I was watching it, and as soon as they started going, oh, he'd been radicalised online by dickheads like Andrew Tate.
All right. Right.
Right. So they've taken what I think's going on. And by the way, he's a young white kid who looks like literally a tiny little boy, but 12 years old.
Wouldn't say boo to a fucking ghost.
He's from a two-parent, upper working class, lower middle class, loving family. So he's not fitting any of the statistical stereotypes for, you know, either boatmen.
He's not named Muhammad.
Yeah, or, you know, he's not fitting any of the stereotypes for the predominantly demographic that, you know, has a problem with knife crime. And as soon as I heard Andrew Tate in it, I was like, right, here we go.
Agenda.
And they started dropping words like manosphere, the 80-20 thing. I don't know if anyone...
Piers Morgan's all over manosphere at the moment.
Yeah, 80% of women are only attracted to 20% of men. So they actually were weaving in all these like buzzwords. And it now it's been labelled as he was an incel, or he has incel culture. And people don't even know what this word means.
I didn't. Like Becky told me what an incel... I didn't know until like 6 months
ago. No, I don't know what it is.
Involuntary celibate. So what it means, is someone that's of age to be having sexual relations, but is just involuntary celibate because they're so disconnected from the world.
I think most blokes have been incels at some point or another.
Yeah, it's called a dry patch.
But I think it's like, it's that you will never ever, won't even go through a dry patch.
So here's the crazy thing. They've taken a 12-year-old lad from a loving two-parent family in middle England, who's 12 years old. They've put this incel label on, which I'm sorry, shouldn't be applied to a 12-year-old kid. That's a complete misinterpretation.
Yeah, it didn't actually make any sense for their definition of it, does it?
And
that age will have been picked very cleverly by a team of spy psychologists to be put out there, I would have thought.
From Israel.
Yeah. And as soon as this thing's dropped, I watched it because what I heard was it was very gripping and it had these camera shots where one 30-minute episode is a single rolling shot. And I thought,
apparently,
well, that
lad's acting was very good in it. Apparently.
I'm not saying the acting wasn't bad.
It's got Stephen Graham in it, hasn't it? The Brummie guy in it. Is it Brummie?
Scouser.
Scouser. I always get confused.
Because I haven't actually seen the series, but I know Queer Starling did stand up in Parliament and call it a documentary.
He actually called it a documentary.
Oh, there you go. I mean,
and I know the thing is, I immediately perked my ears. I was like,
it's one of them shows I've not seen, but I know all about it because people tell me about it at work. I've seen it on news feeds, so you already know that it's a propaganda piece.
Well, I heard it earlier. I got to work at 7:50 in the morning, turned the radio on, and it was on the news on Radio 2 because the boss likes to listen to Radio 2. And then it was on lunchtime. It was Jeremy Vine was talking about it. I heard him talking about it. And then it was on. They were linking to the saying about Andrew Tate as well. And that was his point of discussion was Andrew Tate. And Queer Starling. Not separate to that, I'd heard Queer Starling mention it in Parliament. I was like,
this is all in the space of 48 hours.
Yeah, this is like being 100% being weaponized.
That's like it's almost like 2020. You know, when you can just see what's happening. You can actually work out what's in the afternoon.
They're jumping on it for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, where's that going? I don't know. But it's clearly a propaganda piece.
I think it's online. It's the online Hums Bill. I think what it is, it's all about being radicalized online. So now, instead of, you know, maybe they're trying to blame the spike in sexual attacks and just violence against women in the country on this new incel thing as a diversion tactic. That's probably one thing, but it's definitely to introduce
this. If it introduces mass censorship, then people like Rise Above will get accused of like inciting anti-Semitism and all sorts of shit.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Because when I posted about this and I made quite a lengthy post, someone got in the comments and it's like, yeah, but don't you think that we need to protect our children from online radicalisation? And I said, yeah, we do, but not from, you don't need to employ the government to do it.
The problem with it is, though, is who determines what's inappropriate? And I this said, is always
And
the
I
issue.
Said under the Online Harms Bill that this is probably bait for, people like me and you would be considered criminals.
Yeah, 100%. But then you can get a fucking drag queen to go and do story time.
Slut drops.
And slut drops to 5-year-old children, which is completely appropriate. And this, again, just brings us full circle back to the collapse of government, which we're seeing in real time, because people are going to cry out for a new system because they can clearly see how backwards the world is and the governments are internationally. And in steps Enki Musk and slaps AI everywhere.
Have you seen, talking to Jeremy Vine, did you see when Joey Barton, he sued Joey Barton, didn't he, for calling him a name?
That's right.
A bike nonce, something like that. He sued him for. Bike. He's got him a bike nonce.
He rides his bike.
So he paid him on the court steps anyway. And the week after, Jeremy Vine were walking around the BBC or one of the studios, TV studios, with high heels, pretending they were a woman. Do you see him?
Yeah.
And Joey Barton put a comment on it, must have been on his Facebook, saying, I rest my case. Go on, Joey.
It's clearly racist.
Yeah.
I rest my case. That's the thing, though, because it's ambiguous, he can't get done for that.
No.
That's very clever.
Yeah, well, he used his noggin instead of calling him out because, I mean, Jeremy Vine's another one of those characters that...
He's I'll tell you what Jeremy Vine is, Michael.
Chris loves him.
He is the Piers Morgan of the radio waves, is what he is. And Piers Morgan is the Jeremy Kyle of the geopolitical world.
Have you seen that video? I've got it somewhere. There's two videos. One of Piers Morgan having a flu jab with Dr. Oz, right?
I saw him get... This is a flu jab. Demonise people like us.
No, this is a flu jab, not the divot jab. This was about 7 or 8 years ago. So he had the flu jab, and then the week after he's interviewing some country and western singer, and he's full of flu. And he said, I told that Dr. Oz I didn't want the... if he gave me flu, I'd be coming around and getting him. I've got the video somewhere. I'll try and dig it out for you.
Yeah.
What year was that fight? It was before...
About 2015 or something like that, 2016.
Piers Morgan and people like Piers Morgan, Jeremy Vine... They hold very specific places in media because they claim to be impartial, but they are directly doing the
bidding.
No, they're not doing the bidding. No. All they do is stir it up.
Mm-hmm.
They're the mediators for both sides and to publicly stir shit up. Yeah. That's what they do. And there's loads of people that do it. But
have you noticed as well, Andy? They stir it up, like you say. But the people that they stir it up with are basically on the same side, just on opposite sides of the fence.
The majority of the people, like when they're calling, especially the Jeremy Vine show, they're such upper middle class fucktards that have never got their hands dirty in their life. Honestly, they're just, most of them are just posh sods. You do get the occasional builder or someone like that ringing, but very rarely. And it's just like I say to my mate Steve, I'm like, why do you fucking want to listen to this? I was like it's just pure dribble, all of it. It's just meaningless.
I think it's the same reason why
Jeremy Vine, like what are you achieving here? What is this show achieving? Same as Piers Morgan, like, who are you helping? What good are you doing? Like, you're just agitating people. That's all you're doing.
Yes.
And at the same time, there's an undercurrent of social engineering, about, especially with Jeremy Vine. He does it more than Piers Morgan, that he sways you to how you should think. Mm. And it's a very cult mentality.
I think that's what they all
that's
do.
Straight out of the BBC. That's why. He's a direct...
Straight out of Tavistock.
When I looked into Vine's background, I think he was put into a boarding school.
I hate to, no wonder he's in fucking high heat.
You know who his brother is? His brother's that Tim Vine, you know, the comedian?
Yeah. American, yeah.
No, he's English. English comedian.
Yeah, but he's big in America.
Yeah. He says all in one-liners, doesn't he?
I think they attract people. I've heard people talk, you know, like about Piers Morgan, when he argues, and they go, yeah, but he's got a point, you know. So they think they're on the edge because they
they're
like
not,
Piers
and
Morgan.
And I'll tell you something else. Piers Morgan especially, he's now schwabbed himself into the very top level of alternative media, but it's masquerading as alternative media. Sheep Farm's alternative media, Rise Above is alternative media. We're not funded.